Any eagerly awaiting the semi-final and wish Bafana Bafana the best in their pursuit for glory. Last but not least, we must also be proud of our Grammy Award winner, Tyler, who has made us proud. But most importantly, not lose the South African identity in the USA. Just to hear her say, what the heck, brought a profound sense of pride that here was the South African who refused to lose her identity in the land of the American dream, which we've seen what that has meant in the recent days, weeks, and months as they continue to support the Zionist entity with all forms of weaponry to eliminate the Palestinians. So Tyler has become yet another voice of South Africa in the international domain, and we are proud of her achievements. At 22 years old, she never had a dream that she would win a Grammy Award, and we celebrate that with her. I felt honorable members, before we get underway, just to acknowledge the role South Africa is playing in the international community, and it's a role that we ought to continuously play, not only in the region or in the continent, but in the entire global space, to ensure that we fly our flag high in most instances for the oppressed nations around the globe. I would like to tender my apology, as I had challenges with my car coming in to Parliament, and therefore it led to the delays that I didn't imagine would be. But I also want to apologize on part of the members, because we had logistics challenges coming into Parliament, as there was no transportation for members from the parks, and at the last minute we had to rally those that were in need with COVID into Parliament. I hope some will be trickling in as we proceed with our program. We have a extensive program in terms of our engagement today, where we will be having a presentation on the APPs of the department and its entities. We will be receiving a presentation from the Auditor General of South Africa, which will then be followed by the department and then its entities. Honorable members, allow me to invite the AG to present their assessment on the APP. The AG, I've been informed, they are trying to find their room. As those that are not familiar with Parliament may be lost in this maze of Parliament, so let us take apologies. Any apologies, kitab is Takaza.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members, ministers, and colleagues. Chair, for the apology from whom it is today and tomorrow. She will be joining us tomorrow. Yes. Chair, today is not available. Thank you. That's all for my side, Chair. Because we need a long backward. Thank you, Chair. The minister and deputy ministers will give it because they're going to extend their capacity of working. And the apology from Mom, Papa, from Papa, and coming late. And remember, there's still on the way.
Thank you. To the secretariat. Hand of Honorable Mdake Matiase.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the kind words of inspiration on the Palestinian question and a whole range of issues that you have highlighted in your opening remarks. Let me mention that I acknowledge and recognize the agenda items, but it's important that we start from the beginning. And the beginning would be, and would take advantage and privilege of the presence of the minister and the deputy minister. There's a reason why there is a BRRR process in Parliament. And failure to comply with the requirements of Parliament in presenting the BRRR, the dereliction of duty. And that does not make the minister and the executive look bad. It makes us as a committee and Parliament as a whole look bad. Can we just get an explanation as to why we could not be presented and deal with the BRRR report in order to ensure that as we undertake today's business and tomorrow, we have at least the knowledge of why that was not the case, and then proceed from that. Otherwise, there's no reason for us to proceed with the business of the country. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Secretariat. I would just like to extend the apology for Ms. Bongi Njobe, the chairperson of the PPCB board, and Mr. Lucien Janssen, the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you. That is apologies from the entity, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, Deputy Minister, members of Parliament and all senior officials, we regret to apologize for DDG Letosa on her way coming here to receive the message that she should go to hospital. Her mother has just passed away. So she was on her way here, but she had to see me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
APPs of the department and that of its entities. Allow me therefore to invite the Auditor General of South Africa to present before the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural and Reform and Rural Development. Ntate Matias, I see your hand.
Can't just pass this part. And I hear your disclaimer that the authority to place the departmental VRR item on the parliamentary program is the discretion of the speaker. But that information has not been forthcoming, and sitting here as members of the committee and understanding and appreciating our role to effective oversight over the executive and having to account to the various constituents we represent about the failures of the last financial year and so forth. It's quite unfair that we proceed and deal with these other matters as business as usual without having to know the reasons beyond what you have said, why the department could not table the digital report. Can we just be fair and be frank and do justice to the millions of South Africans who have entrusted their responsibilities to take these matters of oversight seriously and ensure that oversight is not just a talk show, a lip service exercise which has got no meaning to the lives of our people and their families. Thanks a lot.
I see the head of Honorable Dade. This is all it is now. I think it's your first day. You're speaking for Sunday. Yes, I see Honorable Tshwete as well. Chair,
I think I concur with Honorable Matthias that you know, we are here to conduct an oversight, and obviously this is not business as usual. And I think it will be really an honorable thing for you, Chair, to just ask the Minister to give us an indication as to what were the reasons for this delay that we could not have the report in time for us to deliberate. We're supposed to have had it already in November, not in January. I think it's just a fair request, maybe, that at least when we get to the crux of the issues, then at least, you know, the Minister has been given really a platform for us to just really be I know the details we're going to get, but I think it's just for the Minister to give us an overview of what's really happened, why did we have to wait so long. It didn't really account, as Dr. Matthias has said, to our constituency with regards to what is the hold-up with regards to the BRRR report. Yeah, it was quite a mammoth task to go through them the last couple of days. Yeah, but I think it will just be good that, you know, for effective oversight, the Minister may be given an opportunity. Thank you.
Honorable Mamuchete and Honorable Bautapa.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, Portfolio Committee members, government officials, and our Portfolio Committee officials. Chairperson, I wanted to propose a different approach to what Honorable Matthias was suggesting, that we should not hear the department out. I wanted to propose that when it comes to the department presenting, maybe they have inform us as to why they are presenting late, so that when we comment and the challenges that come with that. But this year there will be steps. I hope to get them to. I hope to get them honestly, so that we can understand moving forward and have a seamless way of working, us and the department. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa.
Thank you, Chair. I understand the concern of the colleagues, but at the same time understand the program and the agenda that the Chair is talking about. And at the same time, I do have a feeling that since this is a concern, let's leave it to the time when the Minister or the Department are coming in. Therefore, if that part is missing, is then that it can be a concern to us. But at the moment, there's still time. I would prefer that we proceed with the agenda as it is now. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Memato.
Okay. Good morning to you, Chair, and good morning to everyone, ministers and ministers, my colleagues. Chair, I think I concur with my colleagues that let us proceed so that we can be able to hear what our ministers, the deputy ministers are going to tell us. Then we'll take it from there. I concur with the Kapa and the Mamdusiwe. Let's carry on, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. As I had alluded earlier, our work is guided by the program of the committee. And I know Honorable Members have missed the Executive, Honorable Minister and Deputy Ministers, and they are eager to engage with them. But our program for today has dealt with opening and welcome, has dealt with apologies, and next in line is the Auditor General of South Africa, who are here with us, and they will tell us, present to the Portfolio Committee their own findings on the budget review and recommendations report, and also the annual performance plan of the department, followed therefore by a discussion that you may also be eagerly wanting to ask the Auditor General as to what would have been the reason that caused such a delay on part of the department before you engage the minister. Find out from the AG that is looking into the matters of the department as to what on their own assessment would they found to be matters that led to this delay. In this regard, Honorable Members, I want you to be patient and exercise discipline in the sense that we have an agenda before us. Let us go through our agenda. The Minister is also missing the committee, and I'm sure she's eagerly awaiting to engage with you on this. You see, she's brought all the deputy ministers are here, and see the DG's also got his files ready. They are here to engage with the department, so let's not be eagerly and want to move beyond the agenda. The agenda is there for the committee, and we will get to these matters in due time. Allow me therefore to welcome the AG as represented by Mamu Michelle, as well as Water Land Reform and Rural Development. The floor is yours, you may proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable members. Our apologies for being late. Not our staff, so apologies. I am with Tower Custodian, and my name is Michelle Wagerman. I'm the Deputy Business Executive at the Office of the Auditor General. I'm Michelle Margerman. I'm the Deputy Business Unit Leader at the Office of the Auditor General, in charge of the portfolio. I am with me with Tabiso Madala. He's the Deputy Business Unit Leader at the Office of the of our KZN office, in charge of the Ingonyama Trust, as well as the board. And I'm with us is also Precious Siende. She's a manager in the office at the KZN office as well. Auditor General, the two are behind me. We will take you through the audit outcomes, but maybe just to summarize, say why some of the entities were signed late. In terms of the department itself, we signed that on the 3rd of August. We were closing off discussions in terms of some of the findings that were raised. We do have, as well as the ALA, we do have a policy within the office where the auditees or the departments can utilize if they still want clarity in terms of certain matters. There were matters that were escalated to some of the levels within the Auditor General by the department, and those matters, especially for ALA, took some time for the discussions to be completed. We did complete the audit in December for ALA. For the department, it was in December, in August. I think the office does open up a we do have a policy where escalation can happen. So the department then did request the office to look at some of the matters that were raised. Chair, I'm going to hand over to Thabo Didori just to take us through the presentation.
Through you, Honorable Chair, good morning, Honorable members, the Minister, and management of the department and its entities. What I have here with me is the audit outcomes for the 2023 financial year. I will take you through that, which is covering the department and its entities. This year, I've got the mission and the vision of the Auditor General to say we do have a constitutional mandate, and as a Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through our audit, thereby building public confidence. And our vision is to be recognized by our stakeholders as a relevant Supreme Audit Institution that enhances public sector accountability. Here we have an accountability ecosystem that our message to government oversight structures is that for government processes to work, everyone in the ecosystem needs to do their part, starting with the officials of the department, to senior management, to the DG, to the minister. And also to the right, there are oversight structures and support and coordinating departments that also need to play their part. And from our side as the Auditor General, we aim to provide insight, influence, and where necessary, enforcement, and that we do ultimately for the benefit of all our citizens. On slide number 4, we've got a reflection on the 2021-22 recommendations that we did to the committee and the department. We had 4 key main recommendations that we did, and we took top of that to see how is that looking in terms of what we recommended last year, these four recommendations. One has been implemented, two are in progress, and the third one still remains a challenge which relates to consequence management. But in the main, one of the key objective recommendations that we had was the issue around the PACI vouchers, whereby the department needed to follow up on vouchers that were redeemed that indeed the intended beneficiary did get the production increase. What we noted was that the department simply they went and improved the internal controls to say, yes, there would have been vouchers where evidence was not previously maintained. They improved those controls to make sure that going forward, they are not in the same situation. However, they needed to follow through the previous ones. And that has been done. However, not everything could be fully accounted for, so I will take you through the additional details in subsequent slides. And then the ones that are in progress is around the implementation of the action plans and also addressing some of the root causes that we have identified in the internal control environment. Then on slide number 5, we've got the audit outcomes of the portfolio over the administration term. One significant improvement is that the department in 2021-22, they were qualified. In the 2022-23, they were not qualified. Of concern on this picture is the entities that remain qualified year on year. That is the Agricultural Research Council, ALA, and the Ingonyama Trust. They have been in their court for a while. Then if I move through to the next couple of slides, which we looked at the performance, the portfolio performance, in the department in the main, we noted that there was some instances of possible fiscal dumping whereby a significant amount of money was being disbursed in the last few days of the financial year. And one would expect that as government programs are running, money would be disbursed earlier during the year so that it can get to the programs that they are intended for. And also, as one of the examples that we've included in the slide, we had a 171 million that we noted that was transferred to a restitution bank account for beneficiaries. And in that specific instance, there was no movement for at least 12 months on those funds. Also, some of the observations we had is that there is a significant backlog of land claims that were settled but not yet finalized. And when we analyze, it takes quite a long time from the date of settlement to the date of finalization. And on average, it takes the department at least 5 years. And if one considers that these claims that we are looking at are dating at least since 1998, but then it takes a while to get it to a point where there is an approval, but also from the date of approval, it takes now at least another 5 years to pay it out. And some of the reasons that we've noted during the audit is the lack of capacity, legal and community disputes, poor research, and so forth. And from our assessment, we are of the view that it's highly unlikely that the department and the commission in the near future will have a meaningful impact on finalizing these land claims. And then also another observation we know noted was that it takes quite a few months to allocate land that has been acquired through leasing, and to say if the department takes a bit of time to allocate land, they are then exposed to other additional risks, which I will elaborate on in subsequent slides. Around the performance information of the portfolio, overall, how the annual performance report have been reported are accurate, although they needed to be some adjustments through the audit process. So we are saying as the Auditor General that the performance indicators and targets of the portfolio were found to be useful, and the reported actual achievement in the annual performance report were reliable and accurately reported. What this does is that it provides a basis to facilitate oversight and decision making for both the department and government and the portfolio committee. However, we do have some observations that we just want to just uplift and highlight. The one is around the annual performance plan flows from the strategic plan of the department, and that also flows from the MTSF. We notice that in the MTSF there is an indicator for expand access to and ownership of land by women, youth, and persons with disabilities. This is not in the ATP and ATR of the department. So as the portfolio committee processes that information, take note that MTSF indicator is not in the report. And then also around the food and mouth disease facility, the ARC have targeted nothing for two indicators, meaning the number of different types of vaccines developed and the number of FMD vaccine doses taken. The NTP had indicated that this is due to the non-completion of the FMD facility construction. Then on the next slide, we also slightly take a deeper dive around the MTSF target and also provide a bit of insight. Firstly, there are targets that have not been achieved. What is on this slide is overall for the portfolio, not everything. This is what we are uplifting. Around, I've already mentioned there on the bottom left-hand corner around the expanding access to and ownership of land by women, that this is being monitored through the operational plan. Then in the middle of the slide, we are highlighting key targets that have not been achieved, key targets that have been achieved, and indicators with no targets. And we've indicated specifically whether it's the department that is impacted or if any of their entities. In the main, I think the two that have not been achieved is the number of extension personnel recruited and the increased vaccine doses sold by OPT. However, the target that have been achieved is the number of farms supported through the LDL support program, the number of hectares allocated, number of land claims settled, the number of claims finalized. But bear in mind our earlier comments on that. And then there were some indicators that had no target, meaning a target of zero in the ATP. And in the reddish block, we observe that the department has a beneficiary selection policy to prioritize women, youth, and people with disabilities. However, the policy is not consistently applied across all provinces. Some provinces do use the policy during the evaluation and allocation of land to give more scoring. And also, the reason why the number of extension personnel recruited was not met was that there needed to be a budget reprioritization. And then we are also saying that although the department is achieving on the allocation of land, it takes it on average 10 months to allocate land from the date of purchase, resulting in some instances where there is illegal occupation, invasions, and so forth. Under ARC, ARC has been allocated funds for the construction of the FMD facility, and there has not been progress on the construction of the facilities for at least 10 years now, and the country will rely on some other countries for vaccines, and also OPP, as I had mentioned, has been unable to meet its demand with regard to the number of vaccines. The next slide, we highlight our observations around the strategically acquired land timely lease out. The impact of that, which is on the right hand side, is that you will get illegal land invasion, and now you get challenges to implement evictions. In some instances, the transfer of land to some of the farm dwellers has not been achieved on time, and then also where land has not been used, you get vandalism and so forth. Part of the audit also looked at infrastructure projects within the department specifically. What we observed is that there are some infrastructure projects that we noted inadequate project and contract management on terminated projects. And for some, there had not been movement in the current year. And just to provide context, most of these contracts are instances where the department identified non-performing service providers or contractors, and in terms of the SLA exercise, it arrives to terminate the contract. But what that does is that they need, if a service provider is not performing or is delivering poor quality of work and the contract is cancelled, there needs to be then the next step to say then what, because at least we cannot be sitting with, because in the eyes of our citizens, they are only seeing an incomplete structure or project. And then also on the bottom left side of the slide, around the facility at ARC, $535 million was made available, and we've noted that only $57 million had been spent. Reason cited by the NTG includes vaccine plant redesign, delays in the recruitment of consultants, and so forth. But the reality is that we need to have those completed. So this is just a summary of both ARC and OBP and the financial impact of it. As can be seen, the ARC 535 million amount is 67. OBP, they also have budgeted 492 and about 275 has been spent. But the one of OBP, the project has been suspended since 2021 as there is ongoing legal matters around these contracts. Then, as honorable members might be aware, the AGSA did have the additional powers around the Public Amendment Audit Act and the powers to issue material irregularities. So far within the portfolio, there has been one material irregularity that was issued in the year that we are reviewing or reporting on. And this material irregularity relates to the ALA recapitalization grant, to say we are providing a timeline on how the recap grants have evolved over a period of time. And in 2022-23, when we assessed that there ought to have been certain actions, including monitoring of these grants by officials of departments that did not implement their responsibilities. And we then say we issued a material irregularity to the account accounting officer who is the DG, and the accounting officer was given in terms of the regulations that in 1 working day, which he then responded to quite comprehensively, and that we requested additional information from the DG. And in the main, the DG made some commitments around how is the money going to be followed through, to say what happened to the money. There are timelines that he has committed to, and from our side, we will then closely monitor the implementation of those committed actions by the DG, to say is he implementing what he has committed to in terms of also the timeline. Then the next couple of slides talks to the financial management and compliance. And if one looks at the financial management controls, at least the portfolio is not doing too bad around proper record keeping and daily and monthly controls, but around in-year and monitoring and review with compliance, your greener blow starts to shrink a bit. And the impact of that is that you are starting to see financial statements that before audit adjustments, it has got errors, and even as we take it through the audit process, some we don't get to remedying or correcting to such an extent that ultimately the audit outcome results in qualification areas. We listed the types of qualification areas that have been qualified across the entities of the department. But in the orange block, we are highlighting what is the impact of, let's say, ARC being qualified on property, plant and equipment, to say it means there is inadequate management of the entity's assets resulting in the inability to properly plan for the maintenance of these assets. And also in OBP, there's no approved policy detailing how costs are allocated per unit of vaccine produced. Therefore, there's no process in place that accurately accounts for vaccines that are manufactured in line with an accounting framework. On ALA, the entity will not finalize the recap reconciliations which impact the successful recovery of these unaccounted for funds. And then also on Ingonyama Trust, there has been an investment or loan by the trust to its subsidiary that we had battled to get information / financial statements relating to an investment that the Ingonyama Trust made to this subsidiary. And overall, we are saying inadequate financial management results in financial statements that are not credible, thereby impacting on the ability of the oversight structures to rely on the financial statements to exercise their oversight role. Here on this slide, there is a further detail around the ALA. In the main, this is also the area where we had the material irregularity. And the impact of these ALA qualifications remaining is that the longer it takes to finalize the reconciliation, it's delaying commencement of the legal recovery process. And anyone would know that if you go and try to recover R1,000 a year from today, your chances of success deteriorate as time lapses. And you are losing out on opportunity to recharge these funds of government elsewhere. And the root cause of it has been inadequate project management and internal controls during the period that the contracts were active. During those periods when the department ought to have supported the farmers, ought to have reconciled and followed through That has been the root cause why we are here, and subsequent to that, it also now taking a significant amount of time to finalize those reconciliations. Our key recommendation still remains finalization of these reconciliations, and also following up on the money, including implementation of the consequence management process for everyone who might not have done their part throughout the journey of recap. Slide number 18 talks to the entities that were having material non-compliance findings. It's cutting across quite a few entities, about 7 of the 11. So, but the one that, if you look closely, consequence management is the one that is hitting most of the entities. And we are saying this is an area that requires close attention and ongoing monitoring. And if you recall in the first opening slide, when I reflected on the 2021-22 recommendations, this was also one of the areas that I flagged. Then, on slide number 19, we have noted that there has been a significant increase in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of the department, from less than just below 300,000 to over 30 million. The background to this is that an accounting officer commissioned an investigation into allegations of misappropriation of funds. And the investigation was completed, and these were the outcomes that resulted in even the DG having to report the matter to South African Police Services and the HOP. And in the financial statements, these have been disclosed as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and it did impact some of the senior officials of the department. Then, okay, we move swiftly. Slide number 20, we are highlighting that the National Treasury changed the reporting framework of the compliance around irregular and less than wasteful expenditure. That the movement in the disclosure note of the irregular fruitless has been moved outside of the annual financial statement into the annual report. And honorable members, you know that we don't audit the full annual report, we audit the financial statements. So that means in the financial statement that we sign off, we would have looked at the irregular expenditure and had in the current year, but then we got a responsibility to also look at the disclosures and the narrative that is in the annual report, that indeed those cumulative historic balances have been brought through and appropriately disclosed in the annual report, although we are not expressing any assurance on it, but as part of reviewing the annual report we do. So the message to honorable members is that the change to remove the disclosure means that the overall structures may not be able to fully exercise their overall roles because there's no audit assurance provided on those additional disclosures. If one looks on slide number 21, just to see the year-on-year annual irregular expenditure, there has been a significant drop, but the intention should be to get to zero, because 1 year you think it's going down like in 2021, then it goes up, then it goes down. So I think the message is that can it go further down, not move up. And in the main contributors to that has been the department and ARC. And furthermore, obviously ARC is disclosing irregular expenditure of 7.4 million, but we are not comfortable with that 7.4 million and its completeness because it could be more. So they have a qualification area around that. Then around consequence management, why consequences not being implemented. The main one being inadequate and proper record keeping around investigations, where investigations not performed timely, consequence management not in timely, matters that are in the court, which is for a long pending case, and investigations taking longer to find out. Then lastly, we've got root causes to say, what is it that if we unlock, it's likely going to, we'll see light at the end of the tunnel. And we identified three root causes to say, inadequate consequence management, to say, if officials, whether in the department or in entities, have a culture of getting away with issues, they might repeat certain actions. And also preventative controls not being adequately designed, or where they are adequately designed, they are not being adequately implemented. And also inadequate monitoring of effective implementation of the action plans. These are still what came out in our opening slides as reflections. The last two we sent in conference, inadequate management is a bit sluggish. Key recommendation is to design, and where design has already been done, is to implement the preventative controls. Foster a value-driven portfolio by investigating all instances of non-adherence to laws and regulations that lead to the irregular food level expenditure. Build a culture where internal controls are attended to, and this can be done by holding those that are accountable in the breakdown in the controls. If the senior manager let it be the senior manager that gets disciplined. Regular monitoring of quality assurance program updates and recap reconciliations and its related assessment should be finalized and supported by adequate consequence management as part of also closing on the material irregularity. And the DG obviously needs to make sure that there is progress in responding to the material irregularity. And lastly, there is an urgent need for the OPP and ARC to complete the food and noise disease and the GMP facilities, given the lack of sufficient vaccines in the country. If honorable members and chief will allow, I'll ask that maybe you can share with some of my colleagues about matters.
Thank you very much, and greetings, Honorable Chair. Greetings to the Honorable Minister and the Honorable Members. Thabo, I think you have covered me. It's just to indicate for the honourable members that for ITD they have received an unqualified, which was the same as last year. The notable movements were in Ingonyama Trust. Ingonyama Trust, the only matter that is causing qualification at the moment is the transfer of the funds that were transferred to Ingonyama Holding. We have issued findings, we are trying to follow. I think Thabo did indicate that the issues there are around transparency. We are unable to find information around that, but we are also trying to assess whether there is a material irregularity. The one other thing is that for Ingonyama Trust, we recently appointed a board, a new board, and we feel that would be a positive move because we see an opportunity to influence, an opportunity to give them insights. So for Ingonyama Trust, these are the issues, then make commitments to us with how are you going to address those issues going forward. It was just that. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Last year when I came, I did present our change in the HGSA in terms of how we report. not just giving you the financial information. So our new strategy, which is called Insights and Influence, and that's why you see that our report now not only just focuses on the financial statements, but we expand that. And we're hoping that we, as we build on into our 2030 vision, that our report will actually become more service delivery focused, performance focused, than the financial statement focused. But let me just remind you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Michelle. The delegation from the AGSA's office, Thabo Mahlala, Mamoyeto. Oh, am I right? Oh, I was thinking they said Yenge or Yeto for the presentation. I see you've been empowered and given more powers, Mayor Michelle, and we hope to see the AG implementing and ensuring that the department and its entities are truly held accountable as to the manner they go about in utilizing the budget. Honorable members, that's the presentation from the AGSA. Any questions of clarity on the, your presentation? Now, some of the issues may deal with the department and its entity, but if you may park those for when we zoom directly to the issues of the department and its entities when they present, just to the AG, let's deal with the clarity issues of the presentation. Honorable Thabo.
Thank you, Chair. I believe you are taking us in about the government this time. Only a few questions because others may be relevant only to the department. One, maybe it's a matter of trying to remember here. At some stage, I understand that there was that little misunderstanding between the department and AG on the PSA voucher issue. I don't know whether ultimately there was a common understanding on that part between the two. And then the second one is that Chavo talked about lack of capacity. I'm always concerned and interested in this one because I believe that there is no competency missing in the department. How does this lack of capacity come in? Or is it maybe because some people do not perform? Since that's all, for the last one would have been, I didn't understand clearly whether the, if it was being confirmed that the IT is, should be or should remain a subsidiary of the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. Ndabezi, Kosenbu, the Honorable Kudu.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to all members of the committee, as well as the Minister, the officials from the committee, as well as the staff from the department. I don't think I have a question from the HSBC, but what I've noted just questions directly to the department. Well, but maybe you want to get some clarity.
Thank you, the visitor, the Honorable Trader.
My questions are directed to the department and the entities. I had two to the AG, which are covered also by Ugati Kapa, when it comes to how do they come up with the issue of capacity and legal issue of capacity and legal on resolving young things. I wanted that clarity on that one too. Others of course because management and Allah are directed to them to the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chaita. Honorable Ndate Masipa.
Thank you for your presentation. I've got a couple of questions, Chair, directed to AGM's report. You talked about in your notes the 1.5 billion claim against the department. You haven't touched on it in your feedback now. Do you mind just really giving us an indication as to the legal claim, what is the claim all about, or the department later will be able to help us? The second one is note number 9 on impairment. It says that there's a provision that has been made of impairment of 106 million and obviously accrued another 50 million for the impairment of what we were. What are those accrued impairments? If you can really give us an indication, I'll try to look up this really soon on the statement. Note number 30 talks about the wasteful expenditure amounting to 30 million. Which was disclosed in note number 26 of the annual financial statement. But it further on says that disciplinary steps were taken against officials who had incurred or committed irregular expenditure. I just wanted to park there. There is a note that pertains to terminated contracts. They amount to just under 500 million. There is no indication that with those terminated contracts that there were consequence management taken against those that reported to have. Have you not done a further investigation or you just ended up there noting there is 500 million contracts that will be terminated that since we reported? I just want to get an indication there. The next point is note number 39. You said that the leadership did not implement adequate oversight controls to ensure that action plans to address prior year findings are monitored and addressed. I can't remember which year, but the AG did indicate that at some point the officials will be held liable for the actions that they have not really performed in line with their duties. Where is the AG in that particular regard relating to this matter? Because I'm going to go to note number 42. Here you say you have identified material irregularities during the report, the audit, and notified the accounting officers required by Material Irregularity Regulation 3.2 in bracket. By the date of this report, the response of the accounting officer was not yet due. This material irregularity will be included in the next year's audit report. Why could this not be made a finding in this financial year after having given such a lot of time to revert because the department is late already in terms of giving us the report? I just want to get clarity around that. Note 45, which talks to the proclamation number R36 of 2019, the SIU, which was signed by the President's Special Investigation Unit. I think you kind of just talk about it. You indicate that the outcome of the SIU investigation was pending at the time of this auditor's report. It's 2019, we are 2024. Is in our legacy. This has not really been, isn't it something that should be really, that we should be getting some really proper report around this? It's just a question. Coming to PESI voucher, you talk about the total of 335,603 million was redeemed as PESI voucher that has been issued and the Vodacom indicated as such. But then, you follow by saying, of the 335,603 million, 101,098 million was confirmed as having been received by the beneficiaries. The 234,505 million will be assessed in terms of the National Treasury 2022 PFMA compliance and reporting framework for the confirmation of delivery. In this regard, it will be included in the fruitful expenditure as fruitless under assessment and disclosed in the annual report. I just want to understand, wouldn't this, obviously you can't find where the money is spent, wouldn't this be a significant way to find it? I'm just asking. Okay, then I think you say you have auditors, obviously the ally you have quite covered it quite eloquently there. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Dadema Sipo, Honorable Memato.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My focus will be on page 2 of the presentation, which talks about the mission and the vision of the Auditor General. I was made to believe on your presentation that you talk about the Auditor General that has a directive or has a constitutional mandate to strengthen our country's democracy. And you further then said that you are recognized by stakeholders as a supreme institution in our country. Now, the question to me is that, seeing that there is this consequence management in the department which is not being implemented, according to your recommendation on slide 4, the consequence management which is not being addressed, which is going to make a challenge in the department, being you with being the Auditor General with those mandates that you have, what are the problems that you have to assist in the department where you see there's a lack of capacity of to address the issue of consequence management, or what is it that the Auditor General did to make sure that the department is taking this serious, because it seems like this is something that is always coming back on your recommendation. You said that it's something that is always there, which you don't know, but I didn't hear anything that you are doing as the people with that great mandate and the people that are also helping us in the democracy to do the right thing. So that is one thing for sure that I wanted to check. What is it that you do with those, whether committees there that you assist each other to do the things that you do? But I just wanted to get information on that. And the Auditor General also talked about the effectiveness and the implementation of the action plan, which has no effectiveness, and the monitoring and evaluation, it's like it's not being taken into consideration. What is it that you did after you see that happening? Are we waiting to come and report here that things are not happening? I feel this country belongs to all of us. We need to help one another so that things must move. Don't wait for the last day to come and report here and say things are not going well. But I just wanted to check with you, but the Auditor General has done something on that so that the performance can be one of the best that is done in the department. Because I think we have people that we work together, we can help one another to understand certain things, to do this. And then you talked about the some of the targets that are not there being implemented, but that one will go to the department. I think the department will, at that their time, they will tell us why those performance were not there being addressed. It's not a matter of the AG, because they are not there to implement your plan as a department in your annual government plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Memaso, Honorable Dr. Matias.
What do you want to
more specifically in relation to the Public Audit Amendment Act introduced in 2018 and passed into law proclaimed by the President in 2019. And this process was led by the late Mr. Kim Makwet Meiso. In that process, what the Parliament sought to achieve was how can the Office of the Auditor General be turned into an instrument that can buy, that can enforce, comply, and hold public representatives accountable. And introduce, Honourable Chair, for your indulgence, the concept of material irregularity, which effectively enhances the office of the Auditor General to do exactly that. And it says that must be done in two ways. The first way is to empower the Office of the Auditor General in cases where it picks up cases of irregularities, fraud, non-compliance, breach of fiduciary duties, etc., etc., as mentioned in two entities in this case, Nguyenyama Holding, as well as ALA. That's the first thing that the Office of the Auditor General needs to do. It has to refer such matters to the body mandated and have the capacity to investigate on such matters. That's the first, what the Amendment Act sought to achieve. Then secondly, on holding the accounting authority, in this case, the accounting officer, the DG, and the accounting authority, the minister, accountable by issuing what the Amendment Act calls certificate of debt against such office bearers. Now, having highlighted the non-compliance instance in the cases and revenue laws and fraud and cases of irregularities on the basis of the concept of material irregularity as empowering instrument. What is it between 2018 and now that the Office of the DG has done in implementing this historic decision by Parliament to empower your office to ensure that today, 3 years later, 4 years later, we're not sitting in similar cases? I want later, perhaps when the department makes its presentation, I want to talk on the Nguyenyama Holding as well as ALA. For now, I'll reserve my comments on everything, but ask you, Chair, through your intervention and guidance, to get the Office of the Auditor General to tell us what is it that they have done in respect of the two elements of the material irregularity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Matias, Honorable Members. Let me also take the opportunity to sponsor a couple of questions. And in doing so, allow me to welcome the presentation by the AGSA's office. Perhaps on the first one, I'd like to understand the Honourable Members in the analysis by the AG. Why do they think that there are underlying factors hindering the department to address internal control beneficiencies which result in failure to fully implement the AG's recommendation? And what do you recommend as the intervention by Parliament
i.e. this committee, what interventions can we be able to exercise and contribute. Second one, it will be similarly, you always provide analysis of the root causes and recommendations in terms of your findings, e.g. inadequate consequence management as well as inadequate monitoring of implementation of action plans. In your view as the AG, is this simply defiance by officials or is it lack of institutional will to monitor action plans? Thirdly, I am also concerned about the amount of time it takes before land is allocated under the leasehold program of the department. This is the matter that we will engage with the minister as well as the department when they present. Fourthly, maybe the question of performance indicators and targets which are satisfactory is welcomed. However, evidence from our oversight visit has shown that there is a disconnection between achievement on targets and impact on the ground. For example, when the portfolio committee visited Mpumalanga, it visited some of the pack houses built for farmers. However, they were not being used or utilized. One was even located far away from farmers and the beneficiaries. They wanted to use the pack houses, but the department built the pack house in an area that is not accessible to people. What has been the observation of the AG regarding targets on paper and actual implementation of programs on the ground? I also noted that the AG's finding with regard to land reform is there is no consistent implementation of beneficiary selection policy. In some provinces, they do not even implement it. Land acquired for farm dwellers has not been transferred, and therefore they continue to suffer from evictions. How realistic are the targets that have been set by the department? And this is worrying. Then when it comes to ALA's recap and reconciliation, which is still a challenge to date, does the AG have specific recommendations in this regard? And also please explain in terms of the 171 million that was transferred for beneficiaries to acquire equity shares. Is it shares in business, or what do you mean exactly by this? With regards to Ingonyama Trust, the AG says it has battled to obtain the financial statements of the subsidiary company that has been loaned the funds. What is the reason for the ITB not to provide the financial statement and also details about the loan issued to the company? Perhaps I can dwell further because Umadlala says there's an opportunity here with the ITB and with the new board coming in. We don't know about the fate of His Majesty, if he's in or he's out. We are monitoring that as the courts are entangled with the responsibility. mining who becomes the real monarch in KwaZulu-Natal. But you may try and assist the committee in understanding how ITB operates, as we've had to deal with Ingonyama Trust. We've had to also deal with Ingonyama Trust Board. Then we've had to deal with Ingonyama Holdings. And it has often posed many problems in terms of accountability. We come from a tenure where the ITB used to tell us that it only utilizes 10% of the monies allocated to it, or that it levies for administration purposes. 90% is spent back on the communities that are beneficiaries. In this case, every time Ingonyama Trust has come before the committee, it restricts itself to accounting on the money it receives from the department. So, in my earlier days as a member of this committee, we visited Unkosi Mkhize in Mkababa or Mkababa, who tells us that he actually doesn't understand how he's a beneficiary from Ingonyama Trust. He doesn't even understand what monies are levied from his community. So we once came across an ITB1 form where the community was levied 200 rands, for example, each household in the entire land of Ingonyama Trust land. Now that is not 28 million rand, it runs into billions unaccounted for. 3-4 years later, there was an ITB2 form certificate that came into implementation, and again, communities were levied such money. It can be 300 rands, for example, each household. But you also have business on Ingonyama Trust land. And businesses are levied monies as businesses on Ingonyama Trust land. These have never been accounted for. So we want to gain a real understanding in terms of the opportunity that exists in influencing this board. How you see it, how will ITB be able to firstly account for all the money in entirety that comes into the coffers, whether it be from the department, and again, I've always been trained by this, but it is only ITB or ISIL or KZN that is a beneficiary of such fund. This, Honorable Bebas, is something to take into consideration as to how other monarchs can benefit from the same department in terms of an allocation of 28 million rand, because we're not a one monarch state or an absolute monarch like that of Swaziland or that of Morocco. We have many monarchs in the Republic of South Africa who are not beneficiaries to this. So in terms of looking at the Act, it may be something that the committee in wrapping up its work can leave as a legacy instrument for the 7th Parliament to pursue. But I would be interested in understanding how this new board can fully account for all the money that comes into the ITB, and what real work the ITB does in your assessment for those communities, because to date I've not received as the committee a presentation on the program that the ITB does in empowering youth, in giving scholarship, or in providing better infrastructure in the traditional councils of Amakhosi on the Ingonyama Trust land. But we've also never received, you know, presentation in terms of empowerment of women in the territories or land of Ingonyama Trust. So I'd like to really gain an understanding how do you see an opportunity of influencing the ITB as we move forward. Have your findings come to conclude that still is policy of ITB that only 10% is utilized for administration purposes and 90% is utilized for programs of ITB within Ingonyama Trust land? What are those programs? Pay your findings. You have on slide number 19, 234 million rand under investigation for redeemed PESI vouchers. Now, PESI was for the poorest of the poor residing right throughout the land of the Republic of South Africa, and they made applications for these monies. Monies that were intended for themselves as beneficiaries to enable them to produce in terms of food security, whether be crops, whether be animal production, or buying implements. Now, this 234 million investigation, is it residing amongst the individuals that received this PESI vouchers, having not been able to account for those monies, or are the monies being investigated in another entity? For example, as a person that lives in a rural tiny village of Mbezo on the banks of Mbashe River in the Mthatha district, those that applied in Mbezo, poorest of the poor, had to go to Mthatha to go and retrieve this money from Mthiza. Mthiza is 80 rands away for a poor person to be in a taxi to town and back, only to be turned back. No, you're not falling under Mthatha, you must go to Mthiza in Mkanduli. Then they do another trip to Mkanduli, only to be turned back that, no, we are Mkanduli, not Mthatha. There's a fault under Mthatha, you must go back to Mthatha. Are these investigations, therefore, residing within service providers of the department who may have received money and never had the monies find themselves to the beneficiaries? We've also come across cases where beneficiaries themselves have actually sold the vouchers, because some of the beneficiaries were not farmers or were not truly interested into venturing into farming, and therefore wanted to address the plight at home of no food or of kids that have debt at school. So instead of retrieving a 5,000 rand voucher, they sold it for 3,000 rand and got 3,000 rand. Where is the problem? under investigation must be allocated somewhere. And for us as the portfolio committee to really gain an understanding where these monies went. But then you also say that the department must monitor the progress of these investigations closely to ensure transgressors are held accountable and government monies are recovered. You then go to slide number 21, you speak of 2019-2020, 399 million rand fell under irregular expenditure. Then it drops 2020-2021, 105 million rand. Then it increases in 2021-2022 to 256 million rand. And in 2022-2023, it reduces to 28 million rand. Transgressors are held accountable and government money recovered. As the AG, from 2019 to 2023, who has been held accountable? If you have real cases of Nkosi Mandela was held accountable and found to have engaged in fruitless and wasteful expenditure and therefore has been fired by the department, the case opened against them and they are facing the full might of the law. I go into pick and pay, Michelle. And in my pocket I've got 50 rand. And I see items in pick and pay that I desire, but I don't have money for. And I somewhat put them in my clothing. And I fill up and I exit. Now I'm three times the size I was when I went in. A camera spots me and the security sees me walking out. The procedure there is to call police. I'm apprehended, I'm arrested, and the case is opened instantly and I get locked up. What cases do you or have you come across since 2019? That people have been held accountable, have been arrested, and government money have been recovered? Because there's this phenomenon that 234 million rand is unaccounted for. People are suspended and they earn a salary sitting at their leisure at home. And eventually they are let go by the department. And we never speak about this 234 million rand. This is why you are able to adequately say from 2019, 399 million, 2020, 105 million, 2021, 256 million, 2022, 28 million rand. What has been recourse in terms of recovering of these monies? Are we winning the battle in terms of fighting fraud and corruption? That would be all on my side, Honorable Members. We'll hand over to the AG.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members. I will start with answering. I will then hand over to Thabo and then to Kavisa just to take us through some of the areas in the ITB. In terms of, I'm going to, for some of the questions I can combine, so I'm going to that, especially with the material irregularity, and what do we do in terms of the audit process. In terms of our audit process, we do what we have interim audits, which is status of records review. These are your audits that we do as early warning signals at the department. So we've done that for the department as well as ALA, where we give you an early warning, we give you recommendations to say this possible areas will result in a possible finding. Then we come in, once we've given you that report, we will then come in and do the audit in terms of the PAA, where we now issue you an opinion. And considering that the audit should be independent, so there needs to be that line that we draw between us overstepping what the DG's responsibilities are, as well as our responsibilities. We then do the audit, and then we raise the findings. Once the audit is complete, we assess the audit of the findings, if they meet the definition of that material irregularity in terms of our extended powers. If it does meet that definition, and one of the key areas that we do look at is fraud, as well as is there financial loss. And once it meets that definition, we then issue you a notification for material irregularity. So, for example, we've already done that with ALA in terms of the areas that we've qualified previously. So we've issued a notification to the DG. The DG then responds to us with timelines, noting that this is a legal process. So once we issue a notification, we are outside of the normal audit. We enter now into a legal process so that eventually we can then issue that certificate of case. So we do provide the department or the DG time to implement his actions that he's promised. So he gives us when his timelines are. We then monitor those timelines. If during those timelines he either does not act or does not respond appropriately or does not provide us with the information that is required, then we go into the legal framework where we then instruct the DG to say, now you shall go and implement the consequences. You shall go and recover the money. Once, if the DG still does not do that, then it goes into those stages of issuing the certificate of debt. So at this stage, we've issued the notification for the ALA one. We are then, we will then follow through with the DG in terms of the timeline that he promised us. And once he's completed with the process, and we are assuming that he will adhere to those timelines, we will then close the material irregularity, but obviously we will report to Parliament as and when we meet with him in terms of the progress of the material irregularity. If the DG does not act appropriately, then eventually it will go to the certificate of debt. But we do follow a process in terms of the material irregularity. So for ALA, we have issues in material irregularity. For the other areas, for example, your PACI voucher, we have, the department did move in terms of the qualification in the prior year in terms of implementing some of the actions. So we are closely monitoring that progress in terms of the financial loss aspect of it. And we should, if the fruitless and wasteful is not followed through in terms of the PSMA, the DG's responsibility, we will then be in the position then to issue a notification on the material irregularity. But we do allow the process to be a fair process, to provide for time for response from the department side before then we enter the legal framework. But for the ALA one, we've already entered into that notification process. So the other findings we will still be assessing, and then we will then, if we see that the DG is not active, we will then issue the notification. In terms of the question regarding the SIU report, it is with the SIU. We do get a report, progress report from the SIU, so we do have an MOA with the SIU. We do ask them how far they are, but the SIU obviously operates in its own mandate, and there's not much from the AG's perspective that we can do. Nothing stops. I know there are other committees that do call them. The committee can call for a progress, but from an AG perspective, we do report that you are aware what's sitting in the SIU. Similar goes to the whole. Similar goes to the police. Once it's with them, we just do a progress report. But we do have an MOA with them where we do
Michelle. Thank you for the comments and questions, honorable member. I'll try and close some questions from honorable Kaka around the PC voucher. We had a question to say what the misunderstanding between auditors and the department resolved. The answer to that is yes. That's why we are at a stage where we are able to now say we know and we've got evidence of 101 million. We don't have evidence of the 234. That is what then must be a follow through to say that is what we need, it needs to be investigated. There was a question around is this a lack of capacity or is it a poor performance? I do not think it's poor performance or people not knowing what to do. It's how quick the wheel is turning. If you take too long to do certain things, even though you might be doing a great job, but if it's not timely and relevant, it could also be hampered. Then Honorable Masipa had some few questions, I think mainly within the financial statement. I will answer most of those. The one is around the 1.5 billion within the financial department. Majority of those are land claims whereby some people, they might be rejecting offers that are being put forward by the commission of the department and they take it to court. And the question around impairment of under 6 million, that relates to lease data that the department would lease out certain of their properties, but then the payments are not coming through for the rental. Then there was a question also around the terminated contract to say, have we done a further investigation on some of these terminated contracts? I think in one of the slides I did indicate that these contracts, they were cancelled, and we did do visits to this project, and one, not all of them require consequence management. Some require procurement processes that you terminated a non-performing supplier, which is not necessarily a bad thing because somebody is not saving the department and then we push out. But then somebody then must then pick it up timely so that that little bit of work then on the ground is not necessarily lost out completely. Then there was also a comment around or question to say, we I think you said in note two, honorable master, I was keeping honest, to say why could this not be a finding, because we did indicate that at the time of the report, we have not received the response. I think the honorable members, we were trying to apply procedural fairness to say, to give the DG a particular time frame, and during that period, we did not know whether we did respond, yes or no, we did not know that. And also the adequacy of his response, we also did not know that. So we had to allow him that time frame in terms of the TAA regulation. And what we tried to do was to update the committee in the slides to say he did meet those timelines. We did assess whether his commitments are adequate. We then requested additional information based on his commitment, and we are monitoring those ones. Then there was from Honorable Mato the comment around us also being part of the citizens, and to say how are we helping the department in consequence management and dilemma. As first part of the AGSA, we first aim to provide insight and when then we move into to the enforcement role. And Michelle did touch on some of the our interventions to say the status of record review. What we normally do is, and what is done even for this portfolio, immediately after the audit, we debrief with management. We tell them which areas to focus on, what to do, to come up with those action plans. As those action plans come, we always advocate that should internal audit be in place, they must then review those action plans for assurance purposes. But we also look at them for adequacy to say, if you do implement these action plans, we ultimately yield the desired outcomes. And then, I think Honorable Matthias Michel will try to cover you. And from the Honorable Chair, around consequence management, there was a comment to say, is this a defiance or institutional capacity? I don't think it's either of the two. I would think it's mainly streamlining the process and making it quicker and not be fearful of implementing disciplinary action in a timely manner, whereby if somebody needs to be reprimanded, it doesn't have to take 6 months if the effects are on the table and it can be quickly done. Then, okay, there was a question, Chair, that you said you wanted clarity around the 171 million. In the main, this was land claimants that required, they said they wanted to buy a particular shareholding percentage in a particular company. The money got transferred towards the end of the then 2021-22. But it almost said in a certain account, so on the 31st, and when we followed it in 2022-23, then we realized that it stayed there for almost 12 months, but now how it then got settled was then maybe a change to say they no longer want shares in the particular company, they want the cash. Let me talk then.
Okay. No. Through you, Chairperson. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for those questions. I'll just give some clarity around the IC question that the Honourable Chair and some of the Honourable Members did touch on. I think Honourable Kapa just wanted an indication whether Ngonyama Holdings should be a sub of Ngonyama Trust. Yes, Honourable Member, in terms of the accounting framework, Ngonyama Holdings is a 100% owned subsidiary of Ngonyama Trust. And moving on to the other question, the Chairperson did ask that what were the reasons for us not obtaining the financial statements of the Ngonyama Holdings. For this one, for the previous 2 years, the directors of Ngonyama Holdings were not responsible in terms of giving Ngonyama Trust those financials. In the previous year, the other year, the only thing that we were able to obtain was a bank statement. That was the only thing that we were able to obtain. In terms of the details of the loan, as the Honourable Chair did prior to that, Chair, yes, there was a loan made totaling 41 million in a various number of tranches, which was made to the Ngonyama Holdings that was uniform. However, Chair, as we did indicate that with regard to Nyama Holding, where the auditors, we had transparency issues. Some of the information when we were requesting from Nyama Holding or from Nyama Trust, we are not able to collect information to come forward. However, with our given powers, I did indicate that for this inactivity whereby we keep on requesting, it is not a matter of us which will keep on requesting forever. We are exploring issues in material irregularity around it because we feel that the law that was given, the terms were not fair to Monyama Trust, and there were no interest charges, and there were no indications on how they are going to get back their money. The chair inquired about the operation of Ngonyama Trust Board. In overall, honorable members, Ngonyama Trust Board is the administrative part of Ngonyama Trust. Basically, they handle these forms that honorable chair was talking about. I believe the ITB one is the application form if you want to occupy a event from Ngonyama Trust, and ITB 2, that's where you get the approval. But we will further look into this just to see if everything is accounted for correctly. And also to give confidence to the Honorable Chair that when we audit Ngonyama Trust, we not only audit the part that has been received from the department, we audit the entire entity and all the various funding that they do get. In terms of any empowerment initiative, Honorable Chair, or programs directed to empowering women, no, Chair, at the moment we cannot confirm that there are any programs focused on. In terms of how we are going to influence the board, there are three items that we are looking into as auditors. The challenge with the previous board was that the communication channel with that board were very difficult for us as auditors. So now with this new chairperson and the new board members, we believe that there's an opportunity to ensure that we will go to them and say, chairperson, with the previous board, we had a challenge in terms of being of transparency. One of the matters relating to Ngonyama Holdings was right now we had to qualify Ngonyama Trust just because we can't get hold of the financials because we were not given them. And so transparency definitely is something that we are going to seek commitment from that new board. What is it that you're going to do in order to ensure that going forward you are transparent? There were governance issues in terms of Ngonyama Trust. There were override of control, of setting control. There were decisions made by just maybe one person instead of being made by the entire board. So we're going to share those insights with you. Give us commitment on how are you going to ensure that this doesn't happen to this board. It becomes a truly operational board that is there to provide the oversight to the entity and also the improvement of control of checks. Chair, you also shared on some of the material irregularity impact. I think the Auditor General recently did share an overall report where there are insights about how impactful this process is. The MI process, honorable members, we've seen the good thing with it. It turns inaction into action. For example, there was a client that we audited, and we issued the MI, we issued the audit findings. Sometimes they don't take it seriously if it's just going to be audit finding on an exact finding and Duama accounting issue. But once you talk of immaterial irregularity, things do happen, which is also the reason why maybe the honorable members client is. We had a number of examples. For example, there was one client whereby there was an 82 million rent that had been paid. When we inquired about it, they just said, no, it's in line with everything else. Once we didn't even issue an MI, we just called the accounting officers with, this leads to a material irregularity. We're going to issue an MI. The next day, the 82 million was back in the entity's account. So that is how impactful it is. And sometimes you find that it won't go out to the public, because at the end of the day, I didn't raise an MI, but the impact that I've seen. And we've seen a number of cases being opened also, because we're saying, we reported to you that this is an issue. As an accounting officer, what is it that you are doing? If you are silent or inactive, then you have to follow the entire process, because it is a legal process, it is a bit long. We do follow the processes. Yeah, no, let me stop there. Thank you for your question.
No, thank you. So I think there were some questions that the chair also asked in terms of the commitment for the portfolio committee. But I do want to, we do have what we call the accountability ecosystem. And what we're saying there, it's on slide three, and we talk about it a lot, is to say every person within this accountability system needs to play their role. Because the AG, yes, we expand in terms of our work, but everybody else needs to expand. Before we get to this material irregularity, there should really be processes in place so that we don't get to the material irregularity process. So officials need to do their job. If you look at the department, their policies, their processes in place, but everybody needs to come to work to do their job. And if you are not complying with a control, even if it's a small control, the senior manager needs to come in and immediately, what we say, consequence management. So consequence management should not be something that gets done as a at the end, as a reactive. It should be something that is a bit more proactive. So as and when a control gets broken down, a consequence should happen. So you shouldn't do this. And senior management must play their role. Then the accounting authority must also play their role. And importantly, there's also internal audit and audit committee. What internal audit is a good governance structure, because internal audit is actually there daily. Unlike where we come in for a shorter period, internal audit is actually there and can give an independent assurance. And should give independent assurance in terms of the control environment. And we're saying that if all these structures can work and play their role, we should not necessarily have some of the items that are coming out, some of the material irregularities that we're seeing. So in terms of the commitment, what we're saying is that, and why we're talking about consequence management, is to say, look, if there's a lot of investigation, it seems as if there's a complacency or an allowance to say, if you've done something wrong, you are allowed to just continue, and therefore create a culture. So that's what we're saying, if you can already start with the consequence management, and it does not necessarily mean you must dismiss. Obviously, there are some cases that are serious that you should dismiss, but there should be some consequence that does get applied, so that there's a culture of just abiding by the control environment, and that gets built over time and is a culture that needs to be embedded into a system. And that's why we say do the consequence management, because it will, in the system, it will put through that accountability, because then it will be known that if I do something wrong, I will be dealt with, and I will be dealt with harshly, and that will sort out your culture in the environment. And internal audit can also assist the committee in terms of how these controls are being abided to, the assurance to the committee, because they should be independent, they report to the audit committee, so the audit committee should be able to assist with that. So getting the progress on the consequence management, getting that assurance from audit committee and internal audit in terms of the control environment can really see the step. And also, the portfolio committee can also assist in following up with the material irregularity, follow up how far it is, what are the controls that have been implemented, who has been identified as a transgressor, and whether that money is being recovered or not being recovered. If it's not being recovered, what are the legal steps that the department is taking? But the committee can also help assist us also in that regard with the material regularity. It should take us far. In terms of some of the what we've seen is that there are cases that are reported to the police where some officials have been found, there have been allegations against them. So there are within the department where we've seen, but there's still a long list of irregular expenditure that's not necessarily being dealt with as swiftly as it should be dealt with. So if that can be, if that's a commitment that the portfolio committee can assist us with. Tabu, did you have anything? I think from my side, I'm done. I'll just leave to have an issue to go and back over to the chair.
Thank you, Chef. I think just to close on two questions, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. Honorable Chair, you asked a question on page where is the problem located and at what level is the investigation being done. Obviously, the department will answer what they are finding in the investigation. However, from our audit process, it's a combination of both. There have been farmers who took chances on cases, and there have been suppliers who are not necessarily suppliers that came into the program hoping to assist, but they did not assist. So, in our view, it's a combination, but predominantly in suppliers that were meant to be intermediary. What is slightly comforting is that the department has discontinued the use of those intermediary suppliers, where Honorable Chen made an example of somebody needing to travel a particular long distance to redeem their voucher. That's where the department plugged in the intermediary, thinking they were close to transport and traffic charges, but they took advantage of the vulnerable. And then another question, Chen, you asked was, what do we recommend as an intervention by the portfolio committee? I think in the main is to get regular feedback on the progress of the action plan. But maybe a heads up in that action plan is one, watch out for data. Action plan put great efforts, but if there, let's say due date is end of the financial year, that would mean you won't get the benefit of seeing the fruits of the action plan for a particular year. That is point number one. Point number two, just maybe let's get assurance of what is being reported on the progress of the action plan. If the department through either DDGs or DDGs coming in on this action plan, we have fully implemented, then there needs to be some sort of assurance to either us or internal audit or audit committee that says, yes, indeed, we have looked at it. We have checked that indeed what is being presented, because so that you don't find yourself as a committee being a blindsided. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Honorable members, I had said that let's engage on the issues of clarity with the AG and go into the details with the departments and the entities. And therefore, I think the presentation of the AG as well as their responses were just to deal with the broad overarching issues, so that we can be able to now get into the nitty-gritties of the things we want to zoom into when the department and entities present. So I wanted to plead with you that we move on with the program, but I see the hands are eagerly coming out. So that they, what he has said, that they must sleep up.
Fun now, we got it.
you said as a Yolanda comment, that we as members of portfolio committee must write to the department and ask the questions in relation to the material irregularities. It would be wrong if I'm going to leave this meeting having not raised this concern. For one reason and one reason. The Auditor General's office is empowered by the legislation I mentioned there, for which you are more familiar with the provisions. For that office to do exactly what you say, we must do as members of this portfolio. Am I right? That we can do as we do our overall oversight responsibility. But that responsibility is the fiduciary responsibility and duty placed on the office of the Auditor General. And we expect that office to, as the chair said, an anonymous. For us to make follow up on those who are at breach or the transgressors, for which we are fearless in pursuing them. But we don't want it to make it a personal matter between us as members of the portfolio committee, neither with the accounting officer or the accounting authority or official responsible for that. I want to put it squarely on you that you are shifting the goalposts, and that will explain partly a culture of impunity generally in government, for which Mr. Kimi Makwetu, with the leadership and the country's role in playing in introducing the concept of material irregularity, aimed at overcoming and addressing. And you can see from that response you provided, if this is as usual, and your office is failing to comprehend what government sought to do with the amendments effected in the legislation, is to empower you and to cover you from unfair criticism, and for the public not to see in the office of the SG of the Auditor General as an institution incapable of following through on irregularities such as this. Please go back and correct that. If you can't correct it, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matias. Honorable Kate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank you very much for your presentation. But mine would be an easy one to answer. Last year we debated, the non-financial qualified and the financial being unqualified, those kind of semantics. I just want us, if you could just tell us what is the audit outcome for the whole department. Because there is Allah which is qualified, which is unqualified, qualified. There is obviously, the Department of Agriculture and all other entities. If you can just give us what is the position in terms of what we, when we go out here, is it a qualified audit or is it an unqualified audit?
Give you an update in terms of how far it is. financial statements don't have errors, material errors. So that one is the department, the NAMC, and the Nkonyama Trust Board. So the financial statements are okay, but there were findings in terms of your compliance. So maybe there's a material adjustment to the financial statement. Maybe there's no consistent management. So some of that in terms of the compliance are there. Then you have the three that have the qualified findings, which is your ARC, OPT, ALA, and the Nkonyama Trust. Those ones are qualified. So which means that there are areas in the financial statements where there's one or two areas that have errors. So those areas, you cannot rely on them when you are reading the financial statements. And then you have the other, the adverse disclaimer, you don't have any outstanding orders. So the two ones that you don't have any is your adverse and your disclaimer, which means that those two are where your financial statements in totality, there's a lot of errors. We can't even, the disclaimer, we can't even give you an opinion. And the adverse means that there's just so many disagreements between what your documents are saying and what is going on in the financials. So you don't have any of those for the portfolio in the current year. Okay, thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Michelle. Montavo. Mamo Yeswa and Baumat Klaas. Mautu Matala Bambi Kong. Intombi ya Baumatala yake yati akilali nini akilali mata. Honorable Matripa, what you are looking for is clean. It's there, unqualified, no findings. OVG, CRLR, and PPCV. And where you want to look unqualified with findings, the department is there. This registry, NAMEC, ITB, there. But adverse with no findings, disclaimer with no findings, problem areas are not there. So, but you also have qualified with findings. Your favorite OPT is there. You can go and look at your tri-freezer. Honorable members, allow me to thank the AG. Delegation for their presentation and responses. They've enabled us to gain a broader, clear understanding. But let me make the request, Michelle. That we're coming to the end of our term. I'm certain it's the last time we're seeing you today as we commit. Those that are lucky and are sent back in the 7th Parliament, you may engage with them further. But being this chairperson, we want to thank you for the work that you've done in enabling us to gain a better understanding of what you are mandated with and how we should be able to do our work better and smarter in holding the department and its entities accountable. But as we conclude our term, we are also tasked to do a legacy report as the 6th Parliament Committee. And we would appreciate before the end of the month if you can, as the AG, tell us in this term what your findings have been, what the challenges have been, what still needs to be pursued, so that we can include that in our legacy report those that were eagerly wanting responses from the minister. We are now going to invite the Honorable Minister, Umama Dikizwa, and the Deputy Minister, the DG, and the officials of the department to present their APPs to the committee, as well as, let's, because of time, take also the presentation of the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights from Umama Kobodo. Then we will open the session for questions of clarity. But before the minister addresses the committee, honorable members, regarding the annual performance of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, it is important for the department and stakeholders to understand why it is important for them to table the annual performance reports on time. In terms of the Money Bills Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act of 2009, honorable members, the National Assembly is required to conduct annual assessment of the performance of each national department. And therefore, we are tasked with the assessment of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development with its entities, with a focus on the medium-term estimates of expenditure. Honorable members, Section 5 of the Act sets out a procedure for assessment of the performance of each national department. This procedure provides for the portfolio committees to prepare budgetary review and recommendations reports, the BRRR, which must provide an assessment of the department's service delivery performance, given available resources, and must provide an assessment of the effectiveness and efficiency of the department's use and forward allocation of available resources. Honorable members, in Section 5, Subsection 4 of the Act provides that the committee reporting to the National Assembly in terms of this Act must submit its budgetary and recommendations report prior to the adoption of the reports on the medium-term budget policy statement. It is therefore important for us to ensure that we do our work timelessly so that we don't have delays in ensuring that we comply with the work that we are mandated to do in assessing and holding the department accountable. I wanted to clarify that and allow me to then give the minister, the Honorable Mamu Didiza, for her opening remarks. But I see now Honorable Masipa has left Honorable Matias on his own and abandoned the seat. So there's no loyalty in this policy. You get launched and you're left on your own. Honorable Minister, welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural and Reform and Rural Development, Deputy Ministers, Kappa and Squatter, senior officials of our department, as well as the entities that are here, and parliamentary support, staff of the ministry, ladies and gentlemen. Earlier on, Chairperson, when you opened, you said you as the portfolio committee members are missing me, so as I, and I would say collectively as Deputy Minister, we've really missed this engagement. But I think, Chairperson, from the onset, I need to address the matter that was raised by both Honorable Matiase and Honorable Masipa, which has actually been responded to by the Auditor General as to the delay. It is important to indicate that number of entities of our portfolio didn't meet their deadline in terms of presenting their annual reports on time. It's only two, which is the department and OBP, that had to request from the Speaker some time to actually engage with the Auditor General on matters where we did not agree on in the manner in which they had assessed the department. And as the Auditor General has said, that we have actually engaged on those matters, some of which related to escalations that had to be done within the office of the Auditor General. And I must just say, Chairperson, that some of it related also to the interpretation on the treatment of some of the processes, which really, maybe if I may say, some disjunction between how the Accountant General would see some of those issues and the Office of the Auditor General. So part of those engagements, as the Auditor General's office has also indicated, it actually did cause a delay to a point that the audit was finalized in December. And I must say that in respect of the OPP as well, there were issues that related to the processes around the audit, which made the audit committee of the OBP to have a discomfort on some of those issues, which were further escalated to the Auditor General's offices as it is allowed in their processes. And unfortunately, some of those matters ended up overlaying to the appointment of the new board. So that has been the delay, Chairperson, and at every given point, we have written both to the Speaker and to the Chairperson of the NGOP to outline the reason for such a delay and the request for later tabling. So I just thought I needed to start with those matters so that I give comfort to the two members who have raised it, that there is indeed an answer, and both ourselves and the Auditor General acknowledge that yes, that has caused the delay. And I just want to also indicate, Chair, that before coming to brief the Portfolio Committee, the Auditor General's office did meet with me and we engaged on some of the issues and agreed that there are other areas where further engagement will have to continue being done so that we do find one another. Chairperson, indeed, you have extended an invitation to us to present the entire portfolio of annual reports from the department and its entities. Allow me then to apologize to the esteemed members of this committee, as unfortunately the deputy ministers and myself, we will be interrupted in our processes here because of the extended cabinet rehearsal that is still continuing today, and I have written a letter to the chairperson to that regard yesterday when we received the secretary notice that the extended cabinet lehuta is continuing today. This indeed is unplanned from our side, and as we had already agreed to, there have also been apologies which have been tabled for the CEO and the PPCB chairperson with the shift in the day. Unfortunately, they couldn't be able to be here because of the external engagements, but there is a representation from PPCB. The Vice Chair, Mr. Michael Bringhaze, is here, as well as the COO, Mr. Cyril Julius, will be here to present on behalf of the PPCB. Apart from these apologies, which we profusely regret, I must indicate, Chair, that the board and management of entities within agriculture, land reform and rural development, and senior management are available for engagement with the Portfolio Committee for the next 2 days. Chairperson, I also want to remind ourselves on what we said in the beginning of this tenure, that part of what we will have to do as a successor
as an administration, we have to fix what might have been or what might have gone wrong, build as we go, and also continue to intervene on the intervening challenges that the sector face. So that process talks to a matter that has been raised by the Auditor General in tabling his report, in her report rather, on some of the issues that have been vexing questions, such as issues of consequence management. And Chairperson, I must say, at one stage, the very portfolio committee here did raise a number of investigations that even from 2019 we had found that have been ongoing. Some of those relate to what was known as the SRR project. 14 of them, where the then minister had actually started the investigation using two companies, one of them PPC PricewaterhouseCoopers and the other one Liquor. Those reports then came. Some of them were not conclusive because some of the matters needed to still continue with the SIU. Unfortunately, some of these process chambers, and I must say, they do take long. But we have already started working on those issues, and I'm sure the DG will elaborate further when he reports to the committee. But I must also say the issue which was raised with the accounting organizations, that at times when departments, in trying to deal with issues of fraud and corruption, where entities have been asked to assist in the investigation, they will then put, I would call it not a disclaimer, but a caveat, to say some of their reports cannot be used in the investigation process, which then becomes a futile exercise. We've got one such issue that relates to some of the matters that are with the NEF, and where NEF has been asking for particular reports, you'll find that there is this constraint. So we have had to struggle between that company that was doing the investigation to allow us to give the report to the NEF for them to respond. We've got matters that have been ongoing since 2019, which comes from the fifth administration, where the SIU was given a proclamation to look at the issues of caste, in particular in other provinces. Today, that report, Chairperson, has not come back in terms of the findings. And what we actually received was a further request for further proclamation on illegalism, and we engaged with the SIU to say, we've not even received your first report. It's more than, you know, 6 years that you have been investigating on this matter, and it is a constraint because you can act when there's no such. So part of those issues relate to that. But secondly, Trey, it's correct what the Auditor General is saying with regards to capacity, particularly in the employment relations unit in the department, where some of the cases have already taken longer than it is necessary. So DG will indicate some of the interventions that he has made to actually work with the Office of the Attorney General, of the State Attorney, rather, to see how they can help us to build the capacity so that these cases are actually fast-tracked, so that we address this matter that the Auditor General has been raising with us. Chairperson, I do want to say that despite some of these challenges, in terms of the performance of the department on its mandate, one can say there has been progress that has been noted on the issues of land as well as on agriculture and rural development. Some of those have been touched by the Auditor General. On agriculture, over the 29 years, we can say that there has been remarkable growth and stable job creation in the sector. Employment in the sector remains stable at around 845,000 people between 2019 and 2023. The sector has created about 113,000 new jobs. As at the end of the reporting period, employment within the sector stood at 888,000. The last quarter of 2023 has seen the sector pushing through the 950,000 employment. 136 for the first time post 1994. However, you note, Chairperson, that in terms of the report of the Statistician General, that in the third quarter of this year, rather the third quarter year, that there has been some decline in the sector as well as in the other sectors such as the construction. But if one looks at the country's exports, there has been growth and opening up of new markets, an area again which this committee has been concerned about. But we must say, Chairperson, that we've had some losses in other markets due to the foot and mouth disease. We have seen some of those markets closing, but others opening. And one would say that we continue to implement the biosecurity team, task team report, which actually indicated some of the lapses and weaknesses within our own line of command in the department and those that need to be strengthened. There's an issue, Chairperson, that has been raised in this committee, which indeed we agree with you, particularly the pace at which we are resolving the development of the facility by the ARC on FMD vaccine, as well as the OPT. Apart from issues of the development of the facility, there has also been management challenges at the OPP, which has really caused strain for the sector, and I must say that this committee itself has been raising. These are the matters we've raised with the new board of OPP to really take to heart, particularly the availability of certain vaccines on a continuous basis from that facility. And even where possible, we have said the board must really look at a possibility of looking at partnership, but also working with other companies to provide for those vaccines. On our part, and as the DG has indicated, there have been registrations of other companies that provide some of the vaccines that has actually been registered. There has also been a challenge, Chairperson, with regards to the issues of the avian influenza, as we've seen, and what the impact of those have been. Again, we've continuously engaged with our industry on how, from the farm level, our farmers themselves, as the first line of defense, need to improve their biosecurity. Chairperson, relating to the financial support in the sector, we continue to implement existing and relative new instruments to assist our farmers. And one of the new areas, as you said, would come up as part of economic recovery following COVID was the Presidential Employment Stimulus Initiative, which targets the most vulnerable, where there really hasn't been a consistent focus by government in that sector through business. Yes, there are challenges which the Auditor General has raised, and I just want to indicate, Chair, that you recall that in the first implementation of BASIS, there were really not many challenges that the Auditor General has raised. And in the second tranche, we agreed with the Auditor General that we would need to follow up on that matter, as they've reported that we've been going on to really ensure that the resources that were expended go to the intended beneficiaries. We have not concluded that work because we had to actually go kind of like door to door in making sure that the person who had applied received the voucher did receive it. It is also important to indicate that we have seen some progress on some of the products that have been done in partnership with the Land Bank as well as the IDC in terms of blended finance to ensure the commercialization of black farmers in the sector. Even though the numbers are not as exciting as we would like, but I think it does indicate that there was a necessity for such an intervention. And in the latter part of 2023, we also launched the Agro Energy Fund to ensure that farmers and enterprises that have been struggling as a result of our energy challenge can actually be assisted so that they continue in production. Chairperson has indicated on the area of land reform, yes, there has been progress. unbased to the challenges that were faced and sometimes the pace not exciting in the manner in which we moved. With regards to some of the details, there are teams here led by the DG. The CLCC is also here to also reflect on some of the progresses, but also on the challenges that were experienced in this regard. I must actually say that the challenge of ALA in terms of recapitalization, we continue to work on it, and in the current period, with the consultations we've made with the farmers, particularly who are on leased land, from November to December in all the provinces, it is becoming clearer, you know, how farmers are starting to actually appreciate the challenges of non-accounting for those resources that they've received, and they are coming on board in actually enabling us to close on this process, which we appreciate. And I must say that with respect to the listing of land, we have resolved that it is actually not as assisting to continuously lease, but rather the state must give full tenure to those farmers who are on this land to enable them to really grow and ensure that they utilize this asset for the growth of the community. We take note of the issues that have been raised, particularly on how we embed the policy on land allocation and beneficiary selection policy, particularly around targeting of women and youth, so that there is seamless, you know, application across the provinces. Chairperson, as part of fixing and building, one of the decisions we've taken with the MECs is to really reverse what happened in the past on the scope 3, where the Department of Land Reform and Rural Development ended up being too deeply on agricultural function, which was supposed to be the provinces. And unfortunately, it created some of the difficulties that we've seen going forward. So that matter is actually getting attention, and I'm sure the DG might respond on those. I also want to indicate, Chairperson, some of the challenges that you also know and appreciate, and also reflected by the Auditor General with respect to the transfer of land to farm laborers, but also to labor tenants. While the court in its wisdom might have thought it good to appoint the special master for labor tenants, I must say, Chair, that as it continues, there is a bit of challenge that we're experiencing. And in our view, we've agreed that we're going to have a discussion with the Land Game Court judge as well, together with the minister, to really see how best we address what was the concern, because at the moment, it does seem that this might end up being a permanent structure, but the duplication now in terms of who does what is becoming concerning to us, and it's a matter we must address. Chairperson, on rural development, I must say that the focus on bolstering rural development in South Africa is one of the areas that we would want to continue. Particularly in 2022, the Integrated Rural Development Sector Strategy was revised to bring sharper focus and coordination of revitalization of rural economies through the district development model. Chairperson, I must say that through the IFDSS and its predecessor policy, government has invested more than 1.76 billion in implementing about 680 infrastructure projects. These projects and programs contributed to improving agricultural production, agro-processing, and the quality of life in rural areas. Our first program in this regard has actually been on NARICEC. And with the little amendment on how we implement this program to make sure that those young people who go through NARICEC find employment, we've partnered with other private sector companies such as Bidvest, Protea Coin, Clicks Company, the motor industry, Ampath Laboratory, pharmaceutical companies, to create economic opportunities for the youth.
Last year, one of the feedback we actually got from some of these companies is that the young people who have come through Naresec have really shown discipline, work ethic, and they've really been of value in their companies to a point that one of the companies has actually said in the next intake of Naresec, they'll again take more. Some of them have actually been even integrated in the South African Defense Force. And I must say, Chairperson, that this flagship program has actually been taken up in the entirety of government, and I'm sure when the announcement will be made on how we improve our national youth service, this program has been one of those. Chairperson, I would actually leave the details to the DG and the senior management to go into the detail on some of the issues on the performance of our sector as well as some of the challenges that has been experienced thus far. Thank you, Chairperson. This was just more opening to also give some flex on some of the, in terms of the detail on some of the issues that we have been addressing and dealing with.
Honorable members, we thank the Honorable Minister for her opening remarks. She, Honorable Minister, has a strong appetite. She was already going into detailed presentation, answering questions before they are even asked. So she made it easy for you, DG. So we'll take the presentation of the department. I'm a bit concerned. Ralph sends me a presentation of 30th January 2020. I'm seeing the screen says 6th February 2020. I don't know, Ralph, which one is which. But I still go on with the one I have. It's just a change of date.
Yes.
DG, you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon to the honorable members of the portfolio committee has been asked and informed the last department. With the minister's submission, I think mine is just to hit at a very high level the issues that might be of interest to the portfolio committee, especially from the questions that were already posed to the AG. Coming from this sector, Honorable Chair, I think it's very relevant for me to make this example, and I will then couch it correctly in terms of where I'm dealing with it. A chicken that is being fed for a number of days by a farm, being given water by a farm, has got no reason to doubt the bona fides of the farm until the last day when it's swung. It has always thought that it's doing quite well, and they have got a very good relationship. And I think when I started listening to some of the deliberations that I had here, there are a few things that I would like to make an indication about at the end around consequence management and how things in this area. And I'm saying it on a serious basis, Chair, and I'll bring my point home at the end of the presentation that I will make, but I think this chicken story is very important. Chair, let us go through the presentation. I'm not going to bore the
I have to protect you. Honorable members are now only interested on who's the chicken. Honorable members, restrain yourself. DG is speaking about the relationship between the farmer and the chicken and the trust between the farmer and the chicken. Don't now be interested in understanding who the chicken is. It's a relationship which he's speaking about. Let's now leave it at that.
We will come to that. Children will take break after that.
department, and at a very high level, I think both financial and non-financial, the department has a significant growth in terms of the way that we have done. You will recall that in terms of non-financial performance, the last time around we were at 60%. At this moment, as a department, we are at 82%. And I'm just going to paint a picture of what has transpired to date in terms of the analysis. Now, at all the levels, the reporting phases, there is a lot of improvement, except for at administration. Two of the areas that are of significance there is the payment within 30 days, which is very significant, and also around the audit outcomes. And that all those audit outcomes are not for this year, but for the last year. So that's why we still have got that zero. But if you have got to go through all of the programs that are here, there's significant improvement from a department side. And we would like to thank those who held us honest in terms of the portfolio committee, those who have assisted in terms of improving the performance, that is the employees of the department, the audit committee, the risk management committee, and of course the executives, our minister and deputy minister, for this kind of performance. If you have got to do a time-based kind of frame of how the performance has outlined over a period of time, you realize that if you have got to take the two, the MTF kind of performance, if you have got to look at it that way, on the far right, it might be far less from your side, where we give the final annual performance. In the 2020-21, we were very low, and this year we are at 82. And that's something that we have got to deal with. The chair has initially indicated that there is a disconnect between the performance and what's happening on the ground, and I think that it has got to do with the specific performance area that we would like to speak to when the questioning time comes. But what we wanted to do here was to show that from all the programs, except for administration which we'll deal with, there has been good performance from the department to a point that in the financial year that is past that we are reporting on, no program except for administration had been lower than 71% in terms of performance generally. And I think that that is something that we have got to reflect on, because non-financial performance has been one of the focus areas of the portfolio committee. And this information has indicated we take it from an independent point of view from our monitoring and evaluation team, which then goes and checks whether what is reported is valid. The next level, in terms of us, we decided not to come with what we have achieved, but just focus on those areas that were not achieved. It's 8 areas out of the 44 performance areas that we target that we have for the department. And for each and every one of those, we have highlighted why didn't we move into a particular area. And the first one is around the unqualified audit that we aspired to have in the 2021-2022 financial year, which we did not achieve. And the reason here was because of the provincial employment stimulus initiative. I am happy to report, and I think that the Auditor General also made that admission here, that during the 2022-2023, there were no audit findings in terms of PACI, meaning that there has been a movement from the initial findings that we had the last time around. However, I have got to indicate that we are still busy with the investigations relating to the 2021-2022 findings. So we would also hope that we will also deal with that aspect. The next level was around the 100 percent of payments that are done for the 30 days upon receipt of the invoices by the department. We were at 97%, and it's quite clear we did not perform in terms of that level. 3% in terms of a mandatory area is something that we are looking at. We are looking at big improvements in terms of the system. We have looked at the whole systems approach, looked at what other departments are doing to ensure that we have got tighter controls and improvement in this particular area. That has been stubbornly not moving up, but with the current work that we are doing, we hope that we will be able to reach that. The third one that was not approved was the agricultural remedies regulation. And at the stage at which we were reporting, we had not concluded some of the consultations, especially around the economic impact assessment, socioeconomic impact assessment, that has
since been done, and this has been approved. So in terms of the residual issue around the retrocessional remedies regulation, it has been approved. The next thing was around the 5,000 extension personnel recruited, and this is one area that the department has been at pains to explain. At one stage, we had 3,566 employed by the department. However, Chair and honorable members, we could not sustain this program because it was unbudgeted for. And we had hoped that National Treasury would make funds available, and funds were not made available. And we had to terminate this because we would not want to be part and parcel of financial misconduct within the department. And it is not because of lack of trying to find the funding. We really tried from the department point of view, and we're still doing that. In terms of the FPSUs, and I think Honorable Chair earlier when he was making a presentation, he was referring to the banks of the Mbashe River and what is happening in terms of the FPSUs and how we give support, and he referred to the Mpumalanga area where the FPSU was not working. This is one area that we are giving attention to, because Honorable Chair, we strongly believe that strong FPSUs will be an area where we can be able to save the entire population of our subsistence and smallholder farmers. We did not do well, honorable members, also, on the non-agricultural enterprises. As you know, the department is of agricultural and reform and rural development. And this particular area is an area that we think that for those non-agricultural enterprises, we only supported two, a huge disappointment in terms of when we have to deal with this issue. So we're still dealing with the issue around the delays in terms of its implementation and how we are able to verify this work, because we cannot come to the portfolio committee make a report when the verification is not done. But we would hope that this is one area in terms of the economic trade marketing area we will look at. Now, one other area that is going to assist in improving service delivery within the department is the electronic gift register, which we had anticipated that in the last financial year we would be able to finalize. We didn't, because there were errors that were picked in terms of the user acceptance texting that we have done. But at this moment, we are very optimistic that phase one will be concluded, and we'll be able at the end of this financial year to go into the testing phase for the entire EDRS process. And then the last one was around the Office of the Surveyor General, where we were thinking that we would be able, in terms of our service level agreements that we have, to deliver services in 16 days for the cadastral document, which we did in 18 days, but most of these issues were because of load shedding that was there. Chair, with the 8 out of 44 that were not achieved, I would not go into the other and say in the 36, what did we achieve? But it was what we were supposed to do as a department, and we have done that, so leading us to an 82% performance as a department. I'll then go into the audit report itself. It has been outlined. I think Honorable Matipa had asked about the audit opinion. It's an unqualified audit opinion, but we have got to raise certain aspects that we have picked up, the issue around PESI, which we're already working on from the perspective of the department, and the misstatements that were picked up by the auditor general, which we are working on. Now, we also have got to look at the financial side, and today we have got Mayor Mokono, who's sitting on the other side, who's the acting CFO of the department, who would indicate that we, as a department, we have spent 98% of the allocated funds. That would mean that as a department, just over 400 million unspent, but all of those that were unspent is because of the issues around the delays that we had. this is a reflection on how each and every branch in the department has performed. I think the list of the performing in the department is the branch of rural development, but we have also indicated at 94.4% the delays that we have in terms of the projects that they were having. And in terms of economic classification from a departmental point of view, I think it's very prudent that we have got to outline that part of our low spending areas as a department would be on foreign governments and international organizations, something that I had indicated. The affiliations that we had with various organizations, UN bodies, is what led to the lower spending. Generally, check, we have got as a department a pattern where we are going towards good health. The AG, when he presented, he reflected on how the department had performed, and he made mention of the transfers that happened towards the latter part of the financial year. And I need to indicate to the audit, to the portfolio committee that that is correct. However, in terms of what we had identified as a department as areas that needed to be given funds at that stage, where all of the areas where we have transferred the funds, the land bank and the ARC, to be specific in this area. So I would like to refer to my area issue, Chair, as I invite the CFO to come and give the issue around the ALHA percent. In terms of the new reporting framework, we also have got a compliance report where we look at irregular expenditure, we also look at wasteful expenditure. And I would like to pause here and just reflect and later on go to my chicken store. If we have got to look at the financial year that we have had, we are at various stages of looking at this irregular expenditure. And we have outlined each and every matter where we are. There's one matter that is currently under our forensic investigation. There are two cases where we are at recovery to recover the money from those who have been fingered in terms of the report. There are 12 matters that reside under labor relations, and we are taking consequence management from that level. And there are 22 cases that are at national treasury and the DG, because there is a process in terms of regularizing or even dealing with irregular expenditure within the system. So for fulfillment or removal, that's where we are. And then in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we had 62 cases. All of these cases amounted to 60.5 million. And as at the end of the year, we had another case that is 30 million that we are currently dealing with. Now, of that 62, 29 million are already at legal services for recovery. And I think that starts to also reflect on the issues that were raised by the portfolio committee earlier on. Now, part of that compliance also deals with this issue that I was referring to on the 30 days of receipt of invoice. Now, we outline how many invoices did we get and how much did we pay, as we said, 97%. And there are reasons why I'm not effecting them, but the reasons are not important, because for us, what is important is that as a department we move to 100% in terms of supply invoices. The Office of the CFO is currently dealing with the challenges that we have experienced in this area, specifically around our relationship with those suppliers that we are having. And maybe to a greater extent the claims of the target as indicated. Now the last one that I will refer to, sorry about that, check, would be the procurement of goods and services through other deviations, where we have got 8 cases of deviations amounting to 278 million, which we have reported as the Department of National Treasury, and there are other 7 cases that we have got to deal with. Now, I'll await the CFO to come and do the presentation, but before I depart the platform, check, coming back to the answer, the chicken store. Chair, I have heard Honorable Matthias Lee going on material irregularities and the fact. And I completely listened to during that period, I challenged the portfolio committee to go and check what ADSE had said about ALHA. And ALHA received 10 odds, not only unqualified, 10 odds during that particular period. And I'm not suggesting at any stage that they would have been otherwise. But here we see, a few years later on, the chicken coming to roost in that area, strongly believing that this is an honest system where we are here to deal with consequence management and what needs to be done in a continuum of areas that we're about to be outlined. Now we have got a material irregularity for those years that I had indicated. And I take full responsibility. When somebody buys a house and a yard, if you find snakes, those snakes belong to you. And I take full responsibility in terms of what this department is currently at. But where I have got a challenge check is in terms of where we are now going to the next one, in terms of the issuance of a certificate that we have here. To say, it cannot be that at the end of the day, when we look at the continuum of what the AG had presented to us today, to say that this is a responsibility metric that they presented, that after this year, where the action was significant from all parties that were involved, now that material condition sits with one person, and it sits with the possibility of a certificate, and it's all fine in terms of the engagement. I would like just to raise this check, and by that, I'm not saying I'm taking it fully as an individual, and we'll ensure that as the department and I will respond to the issues that they raise. But this is a consequence of issues that were not attended to over a period of time, check. And as the AD has indicated, culture is not an overnight thing. It needs reiteration over and over. That's the chicken story, check, as I give over to the theater.
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Honorable Members, Minister, and colleagues. My name is Nora McCormick. I'm the executive for the department. My name is Nada Mkono and I'm the acting CFO of the department. I think Gigi did a very good job in terms of financial information, but my job is actually very limited. So I'm basically going to take you through where the DG has left off, and I think I'll start from the issue of ALA. Now go to the report. I'll start with the ALA issue matter. This matter has caused a delay in terms of closing the audit report. The AT has already reported that we've received the report on the 7th of December. And the Minister has indicated that this matter delayed as a result of challenges with regard to interpretation between the Office of the Accountant General, ourselves, and the Office of the AG. Just to simplify it, here we're sitting with AG has reported that department has not finalized the reconciliation as a matter of qualification. We're sitting with a situation where the department knows exactly how much farmers have not accounted because we've been doing the reconciliation. However, the challenge comes when now you undergo through the contractual a legal process. We all know that when you go through a legal process, you have to give people representation. So now, when you give farmers representation and you give them letters to say what actually have we done with them, what we're seeing is that now farmers are coming with different issues. Some are disputing, some give you additional information to look at, when we do assess, we realize that we need to take to subject this matter to forensic investigation because you then suspect that there's some maladministration or some fraud or some cases that are there. So you have to go through this process for you to be able to say now this is the final amount that you need to then raise as a debt that the farmer gives. Now, the representation process as a whole takes a long, it's a legal process. You exchange information, there's disputes, there's mediation, to and from, until then a case gets to be finalized. So where we're sitting now is what then happens when we are in that phase. So the Auditor General is of the opinion that because we have those reconciliations, we must then automatically raise the data and say the farmer must submit, must pay this money. And we're saying we've gone through a period where we went to the state attorney to request a legal opinion. We went to the accountant general to ask an accounting opinion. And both those opinions are saying you cannot bypass those processes. You have to go through. They need to give you representation. You need to assess what they are saying. And thereafter, then you can know exactly how much now do they need to recover. And that is the process that the department is undergoing. And if we're going through what AJ is saying, it means Allah would be qualified for a good one while that legal process is undertaken. So what we've done as a department, and which AJ also agreed, and also the accountant general has agreed, that we need to go back and sit down in terms of how do we then account while this process is taking place. So that is why there has been a delay in terms of Allah, and that is why there is a notion of reconciliation. It's more basically the representation where farmers are giving you additional information. Minister has indicated that we are seeing a big change now after the consultation that she did with the farmers, where now farmers are also giving additional information, which by law we have to take both from them. We cannot ignore them because in future, when we go through a legal case, our case will be thrown out of the court. So that is basically why we're saying we cannot raise a debtor as of now, because we have to undergo through the process. And then quickly on the financial status of Allah, because Gigi already has done the financial status of the department. The financial statement of Allah is a very sound entity, currently sitting with assets of 15.9 billion. There is a slight increase there from 15.6 to 15.9 billion. Majority of what is sitting in Allah is the property, plant and equipment. These assets, these are the land properties that are held and are held on leasehold. That the minister has indicated that there's a need for now to be looking at title in terms of holding these assets in the book of the state. We also have Allah is sitting with liabilities. Our liabilities are around 810 million. Which is way lower than the assets that we've got. As I said, Allah is sitting, it has got a healthy balance sheet. In terms of looking at its financial performance, also Allah is sitting at about 850 million. This is where we derive revenue from lease of rentals. We've got interest, we've got also a big chunk. If you see what is happening with Allah, if you look at the government grants, we've seen that there's been a decline in terms of grants that Allah is getting from government. Just as a challenge of the fiscal not doing well, there's been a cut from 937 million to 596, and mostly that cut were to redirect it for the foot and mouth disease that came in to try to intervene as quickly as possible. Those are the expenditure that Allah has, and at the end of the year, we closed the year with 260 million surplus that was then taken to the balance sheet or the income statement. In terms of the compliance area, also legacy issues in terms of compliance area in Allah. One is the irregular expenditure that the minister already indicated. The SRR projects are really taking a huge chunk of that 326 million that is sitting there, and this matter currently are sitting at state attorney and also at the forensic investigation for some of other work that still need to be done. So they close that 326, especially with regards to looking at the SRR project, it is dependent on finalizing those processes. With fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we also had an addition. Also, again, this is where would have finalized cases under the SRR program again, also under the RICA program. So what we do under the RICA program is once we investigate, once we assess that there's an indication of some fraudulent activities that would have happened, we then subject it for forensic investigation, and the outcome of the forensic investigation will then be reported on. And then the other issue is on the 30-day payment in ALA, which is looking at 88% here. The biggest challenge we have is invoicing from municipalities, which have created a bit of a problem, especially small municipalities where their billing system is not that good. We're currently working with some provincial treasuries in assisting in trying to unlock so that municipalities can be able to submit correct invoices. I'm going to quickly move to the DIS part. On the DIS part, DIS has maintained an unqualified audit opinion from previous financial year 21-22, and currently we're still sitting with 22-23. What is a notable improvement from this side is last year they had irregular expenditure, and this year is something that has gone well. They don't have issues around that space in terms of compared to the previous financial year. Looking at the financial position of this, this is not getting any revenue or any grants from the department. It's able to then bill and collect from the sale of this that they're doing in also registering their title deeds. So if you look at that total assets, also this is in terms of a going concern. They are going concern with 700 million with an increase to 813 million. So the DIS is an entity also, if you look at our liabilities are sitting at 303 million compared to the assets that we've got. As I said, DIS is a going concern. It's able to be self-reliant, it's able to collect, and it's able to then render its own services. I'm quickly going to go to the revenue side just to just indicate how much DIS is making or is the entity's DIS is. Billing in a particular financial year, if you look at comparing 22-23 and 21-22 and 22-23 financial year, if you look at the first one, registration of deeds and sale of information, then we've seen a noticeable improvement. A few years when COVID hit, that was an area where we were concerned that a reduction in the registration of properties, then there would be a reduction, but we've been picking up slowly within the DIS space, and that is the biggest revenue that we're getting from from DIS. In terms of our expenditure, the main cost driver of DIS is personnel, because we need personnel to be able to assist in registering the title DIS. That's why you see the 593 million, that is sitting under employment cost as the biggest driver for the registration entity. In terms of this compliance, again, there is a legal irregular expenditure that is currently sitting with the e-cadastre, which is sitting at with the court, the additions that we there we have been dealt with in terms of the what we call a financial compliance committee. That is a committee that will then assess any the irregularities and then be able to report. And we also had a 37,000 fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred. In terms of the expenditure payment within 30 days, we're at 99.9%. Only 19 invoices were not paid on time, and we had 22 cases of deviation that have been reported to National Treasury and also disclosed. And in conclusion, I think from a financial point of view, there are areas of legacy that we are working on, mainly the ALA meta and the PESI meta, and also just ensuring that in terms of the spending, we are able to then spend the budget accordingly, 100% of the budget. And we are saying we're still committed to governance, accountability, and service delivery improvement. And we are a department that really want to foster a responsiveness within the sector. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Chair has said, after Galva, it will be sealed. But I
make a amendment.
Chair, the department has finished.
Of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Commission.
For what?
Then the Ministry of Government is out in the Tata Ubusu to take the Tata Manda. You can tell him that you are not sure that you
I'm just waiting for you to say you are finished and the department and head over. So I can then head over to the Honourable members will take the presentation of the commission. And,
Honourable Chair, Honourable members, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, DJ and colleagues present, good afternoon. thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. My name is Nomvundo Ndlovu. I am the Chief Land Trade Commissioner. And unfortunately, I am not that wise. I don't have power. I will be presenting the annual report for the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights. And Honourable Chair, I'm just going to go to the outline, but I will keep the issues of the mandate and so forth, because those are issues that you are very familiar with. So Part A will be dealing with the general information, the vision, and the mandate of the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights. And Part B is the performance information. C will be dealing with financial information. And on that note, Chair, I must indicate that I am presenting everything because there were no flights for the finance people to get here, unfortunately, because of all of the things that are happening in Cape Town. But they are connected and listening to some of the issues that were raised. And Part D is the governance, and E is the human resource management. So as I've indicated, I'll go to slide 8, where I've jumped the other issues, and just want to confirm again that the Honourable Chair and the members are aware of the Constitutional Court judgment, of, which we refer to as the Lamusa Constitutional Court judgment of 2019. We continue to report to the Land Claims Court as the court order. And in terms of this report, we submitted the report to the Land Claims Court on the 24th of January 2023, which was the seventh report. We also submitted copies to the Portfolio Committee on the work that we continue to do. As you are aware, we are required to submit on a six-monthly basis these reports to the Land Claims Court. And again, we can confirm that we continue to be interdicted by the court on how to deal with the new order claims, which are the 2014 claims, until either we finish the old order claims or new legislation is enacted. And the Commission was also instructed by the court to refer all matters that are not resolved to the Land Claims Court for further adjudication, that is, where matters are not able to be mediated. We again make a reference to Project Kuyasa, where this was based on the Pakisa outcomes as well as the Auditor General's findings around the independence or autonomy of the Commission and for the requirement for us to implement an improved business process. We have continued with the turnaround project, as I've indicated, which we call Kuyasa. this includes organizational improvement goals such as the development and implementation of our business improvement business process and systems, dealing with the backlog reduction strategy, strengthening land and financial settlement options. And to date, we can say that 95% of project warehouse deliverables have been achieved. Operational policies and standard operating procedures were approved, and full implementation commenced on the 1st of October 2022. We are awaiting guidance on the outstanding deliverables. If I go to the performance information, in terms of the indicators, the numbers, what I've already communicated to you before, we've got a settlement of claims, which talks to the approval of the claims that were lodged under Section 42D by the Minister, or an order of the court, and then we've got a finalization, which talks to having transferred the land to the beneficiary, or having paid the last cent in terms of financial compensation that is due to the beneficiary. Our target for the year was 336 claims, and our actual performance was 355, and we indicate that the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest were the focus of this multiple claims and the increases, and the number of finalized was 375, performance was 429, and the increased performance is attributed to the finalization of those claims that are considered to be non-compliant, which we then deal with during the year as we progress with the general finalization of the claims. This is not just a process of signing a document, but it also has its own process where the communities are given an opportunity to actually contest a decision where the claim is non-compliant or not. And so that is also a process that we deal with. And once that has been closed, that claim is considered as having been finalized. This is just a provincial breakdown of the settlement and the finalization of claims over the year. And again, we continue to indicate that the provinces that still have the highest number of outstanding claims, and therefore the performance is KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and then the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. And then, like we've indicated, we've got very little claims outstanding in the Northwest, Free State, and Northern Cape province. But we're continuing to focus on hopefully completing those over time. This is the same, so I'm not going to go into the slides. The performance information in terms of the hectares and the beneficiaries, it's 29,000 hectares, 29,943 hectares that were acquired over the year at a land cost of over 1 billion, financial compensation of 2.7 billion, grants that were allocated were in KZN of 35 million, and overall the award for the financial year was 3.9 billion. And we break down the hectares per quarter, and the number of beneficiaries over the year was 65,911. If I go to the financial information, we again confirm that the Commission is an entity that is under the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform, Rural Development. And the financial year is from the 1st of April to 31st of March, and that is that of the department. And as a commission, we follow the same timeline. And the annual financial statement of the commission consists of functions that are performed by the entity, which includes to investigate, recommend claims for settlement. I'm explaining this because there's a differentiation in line with the Auditor General's finding that we need to separate the role of the Commission versus that of the Department. And then we then have the branch distribution that settles and finalizes claims, and therefore the budget that is associated with that is then reported on by the Department as having been reported earlier. And that is the summary budget and expenditure for the financial.
9.62 overall. And as you can see, mostly we're able to spend on all of the transportation. Most of the costs are sitting at households, and that is where, which is 2.4 billion, which was the budget adjustment, and then the final allocation was 2.4 billion. This is where we actually acquire the land or we pay financial compensation to the beneficiary. The other focus would be the goods and services. This is where we spend money on doing research, paying for mediation, and everything that is associated with the settlement of the case. That is just a breakdown per province, and again, you will notice that the bigger provinces, like we referred to, as in that have the highest number of outstanding claims and the work that needs to be done, have the higher expenditure in terms of land purchase, as well as the costs that are associated with paying financial compensation when we submit invoices to the bank for the list to the bank for payment. The expenditure per province in the guide, KwaZulu-Natal, 26% of the allocation, and the Eastern Cape, 28%. The interesting thing there about the Eastern Cape is that they have a large number of community projects where financial compensation is paid, and so a lot of our expenses go to paying financial compensation in the Eastern Cape, and some of those projects, I think historic projects, where there were outstanding payments, so we do a lot of work at making payments in the Eastern Cape. And then you've got Limpopo, Mpumalanga, the Northwest. The Northwest is also peculiar in that they've got a smaller number of outstanding claim forms, but each claim can hold vast tracts of land, and so a lot of our budget also goes to the expenditure in land acquisition there in the Northwest province. And then, as you note, Northern Cape, 2%, Southend 1%, and the Free State 0, because we're almost done there. The Western Cape, a lot of our claims are urban and mostly situated in Cape Town, and small claims that are there that we're dealing with in terms of size. Governance, if we just quickly look at some of the risks that we've identified, we've acknowledged that our budget continues to be a challenge because we get allocated a limited budget, and from the discussions earlier with the AGs talking about the slow pace of settlement of claims and whether we'll be able to be in a position to finally settle all of the outstanding old order claims. Acknowledge that we are slow in terms of settling the claims, but we've indicated through our process of FUYA so that we would need to get additional funds for us to be able to deal with the fast-tracking of settlement of claims, and that would include both financial and human capital for us to be able to fast-track. In our analysis, we were able to identify that generally it would take 350
current project management tools, but that is IT-led. And I've acknowledged again that we do not have capacity in terms of human resources. And in fact, if I were to look at the capacity that we have, the same people that settle claims in the context of a project officer, the same person that does the research is going to be the same individual who settles the claim, who does the negotiation, who prepares the communities for payment, that is what we refer to as verification, and deals with disputes that arise. And so with that type of situation, we push despite and we're able to meet our targets, not because we've got adequate capacity, but because we really push the staff to ensure that we're able to do the work that needs to be done. And also, Honourable Chair, if you look at the fact that we do spend our budget, it tells you that if we were to be given more money and more capacity, then we would be able to do more. I would hasten to say that we do not need more money without capacity, because otherwise we won't be able to spend that money because of the human resource that we have. I've already talked about the delays in implementation of settlements. We've acknowledged that it's really about the capacity. And we talk about, we have introduced standard business processes, and also we're proposing to review our settlement model with our stakeholders in order for us to be much more effective. There are issues that are legal and regulatory in nature, and we continue to highlight the polarity of roles between the mandate of the department and that of the commission, and the question of free and post agreement that continues to be a challenge, and the risks that are associated with litigation. We're all aware what once a matter is in court, it stays there until there is a finalization, and the beneficiaries or the people taken up to court have the right to approach all three High Court, SPA, and Constitutional Court. So we have to wait until that process is finalized, and that then also creates a delay. During the year under review, if I talk about the audit committee report, we had our audit committee consisted of four members. The audit committee had three standard audit committee meetings where matters of internal financial statements, annual financial statements and the like were deliberated on. And the audit committee acknowledges the systems of internal controls are adequate in the commission, and all of the submissions were given timely. The team on audit has already been communicated, and so I won't focus on that. Just quickly on the historic human resource capital, I've indicated previously that at the start of the commission, we had a version 2.9 where we had allocated a capacity of 1,400 plus employees positions. The structure has since ceased to exist, and the approval of the department said that we have a structure, which was an interim one. We have a position of totaling 748 overall. That's the structure that we are supposed to currently operate under. And the positions that have been filled are 678, with 71 vacancies at the time, which is a 9% vacancy rate. And the reduction of capacity from the original version of 2.9 is a serious threat to the performance of the commission, and this is an issue that we continue to highlight. We acknowledge, though, that with the fiscal issues that are there and the moratorium that is in place on filling of vacant posts, that it's a lot that we have to deal with, but we would like to then highlight that we are then forced to perform at the current pace of settlement of claims, because if we do not have capacity, we cannot then say we are going to upgrade the performance because we don't have the capacity nor the finances to do so. We also have recently filled the position of the Deputy Chief Land Claims Commissioner, which was done on the 1st of June 2020.
just that the summary is as indicated that we met all our HP targets and we spent our budget. And really our focus is to say that if we're able to implement our strategy of fast-tracking the backlog claims, our backlog reduction strategy, and we are allocating the human capital, we should be able to upscale our performance. We have already created and have implemented standard operation. We have introduced new policies to be able to be much more efficient than we are. We have made proposals around how possibly we can deal with the issue of the new order claims, which are still outstanding. And I would hasten to say that it feels like it was a short time ago, but it's almost 10 years now, where we introduced the amendment of the Restitution Act, and that is the biggest issue that we get from communities, where they want to understand when do we start dealing with the new order claim. We are sitting at around 6,000 outstanding old order claims, which is the backlog reduction strategy that we were suggesting. Yes. Otherwise, I'm trying to remember whether all the issues that were raised by the AG, which is the 121 million, which was paid towards the end of the financial year. Although we finally agreed to the finding of the AG, we wanted to communicate the fact that as a commission, we settled claims 24 hours, 27 days. And so, because of the financial year end, does not mean that we stopped doing the work. Yes, we acknowledge that the money was paid to APSA, but that money was for beneficiaries. It's grant funding in terms of Section 42C. So that money does not belong to us as the commission is allocated for specific projects to specific claimants. And when the minister approves the Section 42C, there is a bank account there that is already allocated by the community to say, place this amount in this community bank account and the money is going to be used for what. But sometimes, in certain instances, even though we anticipate that that money will be paid over to the beneficiaries within a week or two, there are challenges where we find out that the bank account, for example, is a club account. And then obviously the bank will not pay into a club account because that means that there's a risk that the money might disappear. Sometimes the resolutions that would have been taken by the community for a specific project for that money suddenly goes away and we have to go back to the community. And if it's a big community, something that you think will take a week or so, or maybe at most a month to solve, suddenly becomes a long issue because if it's a big community, they're no longer agreeing on the issue. You have to make sure that you arrange another meeting and the meeting must correct and all of the households must be present, there must be an agreement, and if there is no agreement, you're going to start from scratch and try and find some synergy between the community to get to an answer where that money finally gets covered by us. So we always say that we sometimes find ourselves in a chicken store, because do you just pay out that money, because if you don't pay it out, the AG is going to fine against you because the money has been sitting with APSA, and just pay and say, chicken, take your money and slaughter it whatever you want. Or do you say, we will hold on to this money and say to the Northwest province, go speak to your community and do all of those things that need to be done. And if you can't hold an AGM in 1 week, you are going to try and finally hold it in 3 months, get the resolution. If you do and if there's an objection, you go and plead with the community until you find the resolution, and then only then you are able to get the money paid correctly. And so that is the chicken and the egg situation that you have to deal with. But as we speak, we have zero balance in that APSA account. It's something that we are monitoring very closely, and we try and make sure that by the time the money goes to APSA, all of those issues have been sorted out, but sometimes it doesn't happen like that. Yes, I think otherwise I've answered mostly the issues that were raised. And thank you very much on
the three leave with your permission.
And for Assembly, honorable members, let us welcome and appreciate the presentations put before the Portfolio Committee by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and as well as the Commission. We'll now